I guess we have to talk about Justin Trudeau and Katy Perry.
I guess. It kind of just makes sense. Oh, wait, is there a really recent update? I haven't heard.
They hard launched.
Oh, on Insta?
Yeah, and for once, we're going to be like somewhat on time with this because we're so delayed. We were so delayed in recording our early access Patreon episode.
I didn't actually see this.
You know, it's just a photo of them kind of blankly smiling at us.
He's behaving as if he's someone who's sort of just famous for being famous. Like, he almost has the vibe of like a former Bachelor contestant rather than the former Prime Minister of the United States. Well, the United States.
Canada. Wait, I was just about to be like, Hannah, you know, have some pride, and instead I called you Canada. And that's just me. Like, Canada, she's oozing through my veins.
Always top of the mind
Always
for this
top
girl.
Of mind.
Crazy, though. Crazy energy.
It kind of fatigues me.
It does.
I find her really tedious. I find her extremely tiring. I can't.
I think very few things will speak to the celebrity aspect of politics more than, you know, the hot prime minister dating a kind of now passe pop star. The fact that he would sort of even be in the running for that kind of a tabloid relationship.
I mean, his dad did it. Pierre Trudeau
tradition.
And Kim Cattrall.
I think the weirder part of post prime minister vibes Trudeau for me is him like really promoting his son's SoundCloud musician career.
Okay, he's a supportive father.
No, I know, but it's the way he's posting it. It's again like he's a content creator and not a former politician.
No, it really is how everyone bemoans reality stars. You're so right when everyone's like, oh, now all they can ever do is just be an influencer. And it's like, I guess that's the fate of prime ministers and presidents now too. He's also just quite young, right? Most world leaders when they retire are fucking geriatric, but Justin Trudeau's a little baby and he resigned prematurely, so.
Yeah, early retirement. I kind of feel like he, in a sense, is on the trajectory to be giving cameos in 5 years' time.
Oh, man, that'll be brutal.
I don't actually
I'm sure he
think
will.
So, but...
He is, unfortunately, and I had this conversation with my Canadian expat friends the other day. My favorite thing to do in America is whip out my, like, Trudeau family facts. It's really fun for me to pull up, you know, photos of Justin Trudeau and Fidel Castro side by side, or like Margaret Trudeau's limo pic or whatever that was, Studio 54 pics. People love to hear that, or like the Kim Cattrall Pierre Trudeau tea. But my friends and I were also having a serious conversation about Justin Trudeau, and I was just kind of like, I just feel like he's a bit of a fame whore, and he always has been.
Totally.
He just wants to be famous ultimately, and everything leading up to his leader, like his stepping into office, kind of signaled that, but we just never fully caught on.
Totally. I think especially if you were in Canada, like, and you were aware of him more as a media figure and presence than any kind of political figure, I guess, until that became the path that he'd taken. Yeah, it makes sense. On a related note, my dad's friend Avi Lewis is running for leader of the NDP, and he's dope. And if you are in Canada and you are an NDP voter, keep an eye on him.
Hannah's metric for voting is, are they dope?
Are they dope? And he is. He once picked up a tab for me at my dad's 60th. I tried to buy everyone a round of tequila shots at the Owls Club in Toronto, if you know, you know. And my card didn't go through. And Avi very subtly, quietly, and classily snuck in and paid for my tab.
I thought we decided to gatekeep the Owls Club, Hannah, and now you just blew it up on this podcast.
I'm so sorry, politicians, me and Maya, everyone who's everyone is at the Owls Club.
On the Katy Perry side of things, like, what do we think about that?
Good question. Katy Perry is someone who is just, at one point, was so unbelievably relevant that I think it was sort of like lightning striking. I think she was just very lucky that her specific shticks just sort of really took off in the time that it did. But I think that she has like no grasp on contemporary audiences, what they want. So she's like looking to all these other people to kind of mimic and to try and take cues from, but really lacks a vision or an identity of her own. And so she's been flailing like since she got the copycat Miley Cyrus blonde pixie thing and tried to do
so
like
punishing.
Some hip-hop and inspired music. I think the thing about Katy Perry is that she just doesn't know when to throw in the towel or to, you know, take a minute off. And it to me, it just, I think her desperation for relevancy, but then inability to really grasp what makes something or someone pop or like take off, makes it harder. Like it makes it sadder. And I think she's digging herself into a hole.
I was not expecting such an eloquent response to that. Thank you for doing my work, because I really did not want to have to think about her very hard. And I think I really appreciate that you took the time to put some thought into that.
I've thought about Katy Perry because it's kind of insane. And maybe like slightly younger people can't even grasp how fucking famous she felt for like a period in time.
Like,
she
you
felt
could like not escape her, and I tried.
She
I really did try.
Was beating all of like Michael Jackson's like records for sales. Teenage Dream was huge. She was such a moment, but it was like it was all gimmick.
I love that you're like, gather round, young ones, and listen to the tale of Katy Perry.
Yeah, I don't know, because she's just become such a joke, and it just feels like it's crazy to watch someone try so many times over and over again to like get something that they once had and like not know when to just accept that she's not hip with the kids anymore, and that's okay.
She's certainly
not
hip.
Stop going to space.
But I think dating Justin Trudeau maybe is the better, like, I don't know. They're just both kind of cringe millennials, and I don't like to dunk on millennials too much, but this cohort of like elder millennials really like embodies that cringe identity in a way that I'm like, all right, you guys just go do that over there, you know? Better than Justin Trudeau trying and failing to kind of like run our country. Like, ultimately, at his core, he's just quite a himbo, and I think that he always was, and maybe he just needs to go be that, like, be his true self.
I desperately wish that we were back in the days of printed tabloid magazine kind of culture, because I think that then this would feel so much more like interesting and exciting. Mm-hmm. But right now I'm like, there's way too many things to think about, and the fact that a pretty inadequate world leader is now dating a washed up pop star is sort of just like, I didn't have that on my 2025 bingo sheet.
I know, the other day my friends really went around in a row just talking about nuclear war, and I was like, I don't want to be that person that's like, I actually cannot, I just can't do this conversation, but I was like, I really can't. They were like, did you know that, you know, we could probably get nuked at any time, any minute, any second of the day? I was like, oh. So, Katy Perry, nukes, and with that, we get to our episode.
Baby, you're a firework.
That was good.
Thank you. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Maia.
And this is Rehash, a podcast about the internet phenomena that strike a nerve in our culture, only to be quickly forgotten, but we think are due for a revisiting. This season is about communication on the internet. Online, we may have shot the shit, but have we also shot the messenger? If you like our show and you want to hear more from us, you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/rehashpodcast, where we have bonus episodes and early access to our regular programming. If you don't want to join the Patreon, feel free to rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, because that helps us out a lot. So if you spend any time on the website formerly known as Twitter, the odds are very likely that you've seen or posted a subtweet. So I doubt we really have to explain what a subtweet is, but Maya, for fun, do you want to give it a go?
Let me try and give it a go. Well, to be honest, I had heard this word a lot. Like, I came to Twitter quite late, and I feel like I was hearing this word a lot in the time that I was not on Twitter, and I didn't understand what it meant. It's not that intuitive of a word. But essentially, it is when you attempt to kind of indirectly invoke someone in your content, usually a tweet. So like, when you're tweeting about that person, but you're not going to name them by name, but you're basically like kind of calling them out or like talking shit about them publicly. It's something I did on my wall a lot growing up, but not on Twitter.
Exactly. So yeah, subtweets are tweets where the subjects are like not named, but they're alluded to.
Some is that what sub comes from? Like that's its subject.
So sub is actually short for a subliminal tweet, subtweet.
Oh.
Apparently, which that had never occurred to me, but I guess that makes sense. Some people consider tweets that like name but don't tag the subject as subtweets, but I'm not using that in this definition. For this, it's just the alluding to a person. So a famous example, actually, if we want to talk about Katy Perry, is back when she and Taylor Swift had their big feud. She kind of infamously tweeted, "Watch out for the Regina George in sheep's clothing," which was very much a reference to Taylor Swift being secretly shady. Although I do think Regina George in sheep's clothing isn't like a very well-crafted...
Like Regina George is already in sheep's clothing.
Yeah, and I think mixing the two references didn't necessarily land, but it made a big impact. And when I think of subtweet, that's sort of like the first example I can think of, because it was pretty blatant who she was speaking about in the tweet. So it's not actually clear when subtweet first emerged as a term, because Merriam-Webster claimed in a blog post that it was first used in 2006, which is when Twitter came about. Mm. However, under their actual dictionary entry for the word, they said it was first used in 2009. And then I've seen it listed other places as like 2008 or even 2010. So hard to place. There's no sort of instance that we can link to as the birth of that term, and like no specific coinage. So I think the fact that it's so hard to pinpoint when and where the term first emerged is actually very telling, because subtweeting has just sort of been part of Twitter's wider culture from the early days. I mean, like even you were hearing about it without even having to be on Twitter. It's just like this thing that really everyone ended up doing, like from the Kardashians to politicians to corporations to like everyday people and their mothers. It didn't really belong to anyone. Everybody was sort of subtweeting. So I know you came to Twitter late, and I guess you just said you weren't really doing a lot of subtweeting. Do you think there's any chance you've ever subtweeted someone in your history as a Twitter user?
For sure. Like, I've definitely posted some shady shit about, like, maybe... Yeah, no, I definitely have. I feel like when I was crashing out about a breakup, I was subtweeting on my, like, Twitter that had 3 followers. It was, like, my private Twitter, but I was really, like, crashing out that someone even, like, messaged me to be like, "Are you okay?"
Okay, maybe in your more public Twitter, like, have you ever tweeted about something someone said?
Okay, Hannah's or, like, trying to expose voices of me someone? Right now.
I mean, I'm not thinking of a specific incident, but I just mean... Is it likely that there has been a discourse or you saw a tweet and you tweeted something that was indirectly in response to it?
Yeah, for sure. I definitely did some shady shit on Twitter. I'm sure I was invoking someone at some point without referencing them by name, or like, yeah, invoking an event. But usually it was someone who had a large following or was like a celebrity. It was not usually someone I necessarily knew personally.
That makes more sense. And I think that's sort of an interesting subcategory of the subtweet, is people subtweeting about people who will likely never actually see the tweet in question. Whenever you look at sort of like a discourse of the day on Twitter, you do see a lot of instances of that. And when you're like when you're someone who's coming to it without the context, it's very funny because you can tell people are subtweeting each other, but you don't actually know what they're tweeting about.
No, yeah. In my May-December Twitter mini drama, some like person in the Toronto film scene who I kind of tangentially knew subtweeted me. And I was like, "Bitch, excuse me. Bitch, excuse me." Like, I know who you are and we run on the same scene, and also we're both fucking Canadian. Have a little bit of solidarity.
I wonder if people maybe sometimes think on Twitter that they're tweeting into this void and they presume that people aren't doing the thing that they probably do themselves, which is where if you're paranoid people are talking about you, you do be like looking in all these different avenues to like see if it's true.
Totally. My favorite was when someone, and this was probably like my little nail in the coffin for Twitter, was when someone quote tweeted a video I posted, and it was someone I had who had like 20k followers and like a bunch of people I know followed them, and they quote tweeted my tweet that was just so innocuous, and they were like, "Probably gonna delete this, but my least favorite YouTuber just posted a video and I know I'm gonna hate it," or something. And all these people liked it. I was like, you basically sent this directly to my notification.
Oh,
like,
shit.
Probably gonna delete
that.
So covert. Yeah. Oh,
Jesus.
Yeah, that one stung a little bit, but I tried my best to laugh it off.
Very good. Very mature of you. I think,
I was like, I'm also my least favorite YouTuber. I don't know.
I feel like I did most of my subtweeting in high school when I very much did have Twitter, and I was quite messy with it. It's so funny because I'm a pretty shy, non-confrontational person, but I did hate,
yeah, but not like, in high school. You were kind of...
Well, I was like on the feistier end, but I think I definitely also saved some things for the keyboard. One time, this like kid from our high school was being a brat, and he was tweeting like, "I hate this, I hate this, I hate this." And so I tweeted, "We get it, you hate everything," which I thought was funny. And then he blocked me on Twitter. Maybe like for context, this specific group of people I was in high school, where everyone was doing it, we were just like subtweeting and tweeting kind of like weird ass shit. Like,
yeah, ESA didn't have traditional bullying. It had like malicious, drug using, really angsty teenagers who subtweeted instead.
But yeah, so we all do it. And yet it should come as no surprise that like, despite its popularity, the subtweet has pretty much always been universally reviled. And I kind of want to try and understand why that is. So a major charge against the subtweet is this idea that it's, you know, basically just like passive aggressive. In 2013, which I guess is in the earlier days of the subtweet as like a more known term, the writer Edward Champion wrote an article for Salon about how subtweeting was ruining Twitter. And he wrote that the subtweet is Twitter's answer to passive aggression, which remains the great cancer of American discourse.
Oh my God.
So I want to focus on this sort of accusation of passive aggression. Do you consider the subtweet a form of passive aggression, first of all?
Yeah, it is literally digital passive aggression, that it's the digital embodiment of it, but everything's a digital embodiment of something. Passive aggression needed to go somewhere on the internet. I have a feeling you're going to come in here with a really nuanced take.
Hey, have you listened to this podcast before?
No.
So I get this take, but I, as Maya alluded to, do want to offer a like maybe more nuanced approach to thinking about the subtweet in this context. In a 2014 piece for The Guardian, Hannah Jane Parkinson says that the best subtweets, ones which are, quote, witty and waspish, are akin to Oscar Wilde one-liners. And I really loved this. I think she's spot on. So to illustrate this, here are some Oscar Wilde quotes that I got from a listicle from Another Man magazine of his shadiest reads. So the first is from The Importance of Being Earnest. He said, "I never saw anybody take so long to dress and with such little result." Another from A House of Pomegranates. "He is really not so ugly after all." And this one from The Duchess of Padua. "Some cause happiness wherever they go, others whenever they go." And If you close your eyes and maybe modernize some of the language, do you feel like these could maybe sound like some sort of a subtweet? Could you not see someone posting this on Twitter?
Totally. Like, I think that there is just an inherent side eye to a subtweet. I mean, you could really make the argument about anything that if it's done wittily or like intelligently, it works. But yeah, I mean, there is something just bitchy and gay about a subtweet that Oscar Wilde, you know, is embodying. This does really feel like the wimp gossip is empowering argument that's floating around, which I sometimes love and sometimes find kind of a reach. But yeah, for sure.
Well, we're going to put a pin in bitchy and gay and come back to that, actually.
We're putting a pin in bitchy and gay. It's my lucky day.
First, I'm curious, like, what do you think makes a good subtweet?
Well, one, I feel like if the person on the receiving end kind of deserves it, that's one aspect of it. I think any sort of diss that's speaking to some sort of truth that can be acknowledged or like felt among the reader or like the spectator is always good as well. And make it short. Make it short and snappy, you know? Be concise with it. But like, it really is ultimately just a diss a little bit.
Yeah. And there's an art to a good diss.
It's like rapping. It's like the cipher, you know?
Well, for sure. And I mean, is Oscar Wilde not akin to, you know, a Drake or a Kendrick in the present age?
Yeah. Well, like, yeah, Clarence's parents have a real good marriage. Take Clarence out of the equation. You got your subtweet. Blank's parents. Someone's parents have a really good marriage.
So basically what you're saying is totally correct. I completely agree. Christine Fryer wrote an article for Mel magazine about like what makes a good subtweet, and she identified these three components, which I'm going to kind of use as like a barometer for, yeah, quality. They should have your specific experience, obviously, involved in that.
embodied, situated perspectives.
They should have, you know, your followers sitting on the sidelines trying to figure out who you're talking about, and then they should contain some greater truth about being alive, which I think, yeah, totally right. A good subtweet should have entertainment value and some degree of relatability or memeability, basically. I want to apply this to an excellent subtweeter, Rihanna. Rihanna used to have an amazing Twitter presence. I'm going to pull up a couple examples that sort of, I think, exemplify a, quote, like, good subtweet. So the first is during a feud she was having with Ciara, when Ciara tweeted that Rihanna didn't want to run into her on or off stage. And then Rihanna tweeted, good luck booking that stage you speak of. And then, okay, the context is dark, and maybe we have to not think about that because I just want to talk about the quality of the tweet itself. But when Amanda Bynes was like really going through it in 2013, she tweeted a bunch of horrible stuff about Rihanna and Chris Brown. And then Rihanna simply tweeted, you see what happens when they cancel intervention.
Oh no.
Again, context of it, very dark. As a tweet, pretty great.
Rihanna tweeting with personality. Those are bygone days.
Like, truly. But yeah, I think, like you were saying with the shortness aspect, like, in very few characters, both of these tweets, like, really managed to clearly reference a specific situation in Rihanna's life. But there's this vagueness to them that you could repurpose them. Like, they could just be sound bites, which I think is, like, if we're talking about subtweets as in like the form of an insult, I think that that's what makes them iconic, essentially. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what makes them really stick. To place the subtweet in a more modern context and to bring us back to, you know, the bitchy and gay of it all, you could think of the subtweet as a form of shade. So in her article, The Subtle Art of Shade, the writer Anna Holmes wrote, at its most refined, shade should have an element of plausible deniability so that the shade thrower can pretend that he or she didn't actually mean to behave with incivility, making it all the more delicious. Which I also think is like a very similar way to how you might describe a good subtweet. You don't want what you're saying to be like a pointed critique of something or someone. You want to kind of say something that could just be like a non sequitur. But once you've, like, have the context, you know that it's actually very, very biting.
Like, it has to kind of stand on its own as an object.
Yeah, exactly. And so in the article, Holmes argues that shade has always been subversive, and she cites its cultural significance within marginalized communities, particularly gay men and Black women. She argues that shade is essentially a way to covertly communicate something in a way that is, like, only detectable to a select audience. This idea of, we're in the company of people that it might be bad or dangerous for me to be critical of publicly, but maybe in this coded language, I can communicate to you, someone from this same community, what we're probably both thinking.
It's like, if you know, you know kind of situation.
Yeah, exactly. And Holmes calls it basically an art form. She cites the world of drag balls and calls shade a, quote, more developed iteration of reading. Like, when you read someone, it's more direct and specific. I'd be like, Maya, listing off a bunch of things I don't like about you. Whereas with shade, like a subtweet, there is this more psychological element because as the recipient, you're meant to be left kind of guessing if you've been shaded or like subtweeted about. Like, it's clear, but it's not clear enough that you could really call someone out without looking like you're a little bit paranoid.
Yeah, yeah, you're it's kind of like gaslighting in so many characters.
I think it's psychological warfare in the most creative sense when done right, which is an important aspect to it. But yeah, if you think about like when Mariah Carey said I don't know her about J-Lo, where it's like she's not actually saying anything mean about J-Lo. She's more just denying J-Lo's relevancy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
At all.
Would it be an effective or a bad subtweet if I was like talking about this 5'3 bitch who I used to be best friends with? Like, what would?
Yeah. Too specific.
Girls who take too long to figure out their mics are so annoying.
No, see, that's a shit subtweet.
Did I just obliterate you with my witticism?
Yes, absolutely. On the floor, red to filth.
My dreams of being a freestyle rapper were really crushed early on.
Was this your, like, slam poetry phase?
I just really liked 8 Mile.
So Holmes continues, on the internet, a complex grammar has developed around Shade, retaining much of the pleasure and humor of its older iterations, but with wider reaching effects. Take the subtweet, a tweet objecting to something someone has said or done without actually using that person's name. It's the digital equivalent of talking trash about someone at a dinner table without ever acknowledging the person's presence.
Mm-hmm. I feel like there's a lot of good stuff like that. Austin, Tolstoy, like, I'm reading Anna Karenina right now, and I feel like people are pretty good at subtweeting.
Totally. Well, exactly. That's why I thought the Oscar Wilde comparison was so perfect. Also, like, if you're reading Shakespeare, like, there's a lot of fucking shady lines that people are saying to one another, and they have the snappiness and, like, eloquence of a good Rihanna tweet.
Shakespeare was also bitchy and gay. Like, let's
yes, but also a woman, and also 20 years old, and also, like, 5 people. So both Shade and subtweeting require stealth and wit, as we've established, which don't necessarily come easy to a lot of people, myself included. Like, my subtweets are ass. They're ass. So, for example, I want to compare Rihanna's Twitter skills to another prolific subtweeter, Demi Lovato. In 2018, Demi tweeted, "The other night I got to sing SNS, which is her song Sorry Not Sorry, directly to one of the USA's most notorious bullies. It felt so fucking great. That's what the song is about. Three exclamation points. Sorry Not Sorry that you were in the audience watching me kill it." And then followed it up with, "And BTW, he's remaining nameless because he doesn't deserve the relevance he doesn't have anymore." This was about nice. Perez Hilton.
Oh no. It's, yeah, when people try to get, like, Perez Hilton, famous nut job, quite just kind of a bottom feeder, but witty.
Witty, but also though, it's just the fact that you are tweeting about someone as irrelevant as Perez Hilton.
Like, you're bothered, yeah.
Yes. And then
Demi Lovato is also a famous cringe lord, unfortunately.
Yes. And that is someone who is emotion first, wit second.
Yeah.
Whereas I'd say Rihanna is the opposite. In 2016, she also tweeted in regards to Taylor Swift, like, donated money to Kesha's legal funds. Demi Lovato has hated Taylor Swift since they were on, like, Disney. But she tweeted, "Take something to Capitol Hill or actually speak about something and then I'll be impressed." Which is just like, again, I don't know. How would you compare her tweets to Rihanna's?
It's just not funny, is it?
No.
No, I mean, yeah. Demi Lovato is not really known for her elaborate wordplay. She's known for kind of, like, crashing out publicly often. And that's okay. That's okay. But, you know, she's had a hard time of it. But
I'm
not going to go to her to be, like, looking cool and collected, you know?
Yeah, I think it goes to show that maybe, like, this instinct just comes naturally to some more than others.
Are you going to talk about Phaedra from Real House? Oh, I guess it's not a subtweet. I'm just thinking about a really important moment of Shade in pop culture history when Phaedra from Real Housewives of Atlanta, I can't remember who the other woman was, but she tells her.
Kenya, I believe.
She basically, like, just destroys her, like, just eviscerates her verbally by saying that her child was, like, the product of some man jerking off into a cup so he could buy himself a slice of pizza that night. Something like that. Anyways, yeah. We can actually just wall insert it here.
She needs a storyline, so she keeps re-bringing it up. This happened in 2012. It's 2014 now, and she's still trying to use it because she has nothing else going on. And while she's sitting around, running around, talking about my husband and the father of my children, and she spends her weekends peddling through sperm banks, looking through catalogs to try to find a donor. Honey, you don't know if your baby daddy will be an axe murderer or a child molester, because what you will know is that he needed $10 to get him a medium-sized pizza so he ejaculated in a cup so you could have a kid. Now check that.
An incredible moment of Shade, definitely. I mean, I think Real Housewives are a really good example to look to for subtweeting because they do it shamelessly and prolifically, especially whilst a season is playing. And the best part is they will subtweet each other for the months that, like, their show is airing, and then they all have to meet at the reunion, and then they all have to, like, try and defend their subtweet and pretend that they weren't subtweeting this other person.
Yeah. They're like, "I wasn't about you."
So yeah, you know, the power of Rihanna's tweets is that she manages to be petty without looking petty. And she just comes off, as we said, as unbothered. Demi Lovato seems very bothered. You know, it's clear that the subjects of her tweets have been on her mind for a while, which is fair. I think most of the time, if we're subtweeting about someone, that is the case. It's because somebody is on our mind. But I would also say, like, maybe from a, like, a writing standpoint, Demi's tweets are long and specific. They're too wordy. They're clearly, like, more like personal expressions of feelings than a quip.
Like a diary entry.
Exactly. Those are the types of subtweets that I imagine Edward Champion was writing about in his article about passive aggression. In the article, he writes, "Once you peel away the derisive snub, the subtweet ultimately reveals that the person not being explicitly referred to really matters. Instead of empowering the subtweeter, the subtweet gives power to the unnamed." So.
Yeah. Like, you kind of look cool because you're like, damn, I'm really on your mind, hey.
When you know you have someone bothered like that, it ultimately does work better in your favor. Mm-hmm. But it's also very difficult to control your emotions. But we'll talk about that later.
She's so me. Well, she's lived with me for fucking 3 years. She knows.
Drama queen? Moi.
Well, yeah. We've both had our tantrums. Guys, the holidays are just around the corner. Personally, I like to get my shopping done early. The only problem is I'm always holding out for the perfect gift, which isn't always easy to find. Luckily for me and my loved ones, Quince has me covered. With Quince, you can find luxurious gifts like cashmere sweaters or Italian wool jackets for super reasonable prices. Hannah told me she's never felt fancier than when she puts on her new Mongolian cashmere sweater from Quince, and she loves to see the shock on people's faces when she tells them it was only $50. Plus, her fingers are going to stay nice and toasty all winter long thanks to her beautiful shearling gloves. And if you thought Quince was only looking out for the fashion girlies, you thought wrong. Quince has gifting options for everyone in your life, from the home cooks to the world travelers. I, for one, have been cooking up a storm in my stainless steel sauté pan, which I bought after having a freakout about nonstick, but that's a story for another time. Find gifts so good you'll want to keep them with Quince. Go to quince.com/rehash for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/rehash to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/rehash. Being moody doesn't have to be a bad thing. Sometimes it can be fun to lean into how we're feeling by surrounding ourselves with things that match that feeling. Our moods play a big role in our choice of music, food, even lighting. So why not extend that logic to cannabis products? This is possible thanks to our sponsor, Mood, an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC products right to your door. Gummies that only get you high? That's so passé. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. And with our promo code REHASH, you can get 20% off your first order at mood.com. Whether that's mind magic gummies for deep work and creativity, sleepy time to get you settled for a restful night, or chill out for some needed relaxation. THC gummies are everywhere these days, so why not go with a brand that lets you customize your experience? Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. The best part is, Mood ships directly and discreetly to your door. That means no more waiting in dispensary lines, and no risk of an awkward run-in with your mom's friend Mary. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code REHASH. So head to mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code REHASH when you check out to save 20% off your first order.
So I want to direct our attention away from the subtweet for a second. Maya, have you ever heard of vague booking?
Literally never in my life.
So I hadn't until I started researching, but every article about the subtweet would bring up this idea of vague booking as if it were like the older cousin of the subtweet. Like, first we had vague booking, then we had subtweeting. Basically, vague booking refers to these ambiguous Facebook posts that are written with the intention of getting attention from friends, peers, whatever. So, like, either to have people try and guess, like, what are they talking about, or to try and like get some kind of sympathy or concern.
Really not okay today. Don't ask.
The amount of tweets I've posted that were like, I'm sad. Life sucks. No context.
Cool.
I pulled up some examples from my like early Facebook days. One status said, is sad. Why would you be such a jerk? Posted a lot of song lyrics. Life isn't about waiting for the storm to pass. It's about learning to dance in the rain. Sometimes you just need a little help from your friends. Heart emoji. Chickens. Hee hee. Heart. You're so mean. What the hell?
Okay, you need to get me on some of these next time. I wish I could find mine.
Fuck, maybe you can insert them. I sad. It's all someone's fault. Fault and someone are spelt wrong.
Wait, I sad. It's all someone's fault. That's so God, sick.
Why the hell am I so tired? That's not really a vague book. I just thought it was really funny.
Dear God, it's me, Hannah.
Why the hell am I so tired?
Yeah.
Woo. So basically, like, the terms vague booking and subtweeting can refer to activity outside of the platforms they originated on. I've seen people describe, you know, in real life behavior as a subtweet even. But basically, like, subtweeting is usually about a specific person or institution, whereas the subject of a vague book can be anything.
Wait, like, you can subtweet an institution? Like, I'm talking mad shit about Wendy's, but I won't say who they are. Well,
like, okay, let's say, like, The Cut published a stupid fucking article. Someone might, like, make a tweet about the article without being, like, The Cut article is stupid, but they might be referring to the fact that The Cut publishes a lot of stupid articles.
Right, right. The Cut really has mastered the art of clickbait, though. Like, those ads are constantly coming up, and I'm eating them right up.
I love it. It's like highbrow clickbait.
Yeah, yeah. They also have like a sexy illustration to go along with it.
Clickbait for like semi-intellectuals.
Semi-intellectuals such as ourselves.
Basically, yeah. Like a vague book doesn't have to be about someone or something. Or it doesn't have to be about a noun. Like the subject doesn't have to be a person or like a body of people. The subject can be like something that happened to you today, but you're not going to give any detail about it. You're going to allude to it. So it might be, you know, like me being like, why are you such a jerk? But it could be a bit more creative and it could be like wine at 5 p.m., a bunch of ellipses. And then we might also insinuate that something's going on with this person, but they're cloaking it.
Yeah, yeah.
Song lyrics are a pretty popular choice.
Wine at 5 p.m., something's wrong with this person.
Well, like, you know what I mean? Where you're like, I'm going to let people know I had a bad day, but I'm not going to say I had a bad
day. They're like, I think Hannah's having a manic episode at 5 p.m.
Well, sure. If I posted that now, but if someone's aunt posted, you know, like,
it's 1 o'clock somewhere.
Is it too early to start drinking? And like, we know that maybe like she's just had a divorce.
But did she do... Okay. So she knows that she's posting that with the intention that like she so wants people to know she's down bad.
A vague book is your way of signaling, like, give me attention, give me some concern, but, like, no fucking way am I gonna write a Facebook status, like, my ex-husband is being really annoying about this custody agreement, and he wants to take the girls, like, for 2 weeks, even though we had plans to go swimming or something, you know what I mean? So the whole idea is to sort of, get people to message asking, are you okay? Or comment asking, you're okay. Signaling without saying it explicitly. Did you ever vague book? Like, I've just obviously shared a couple examples of my past.
Do I ever now?
No. Are you presently vague booking? I haven't been on Facebook in a while. My current day vague book is
a posting a photo of me crying on like close friends. You know, that's my vague booking now. But
well, sure.
Everyone's like, Maya, what's wrong? Or like me saying, gonna kill myself, you know, with cry face on close friends. I certainly have. Of course. I was really doing the like, don't ask me what's wrong, .. Feeling really mad today about something, but I won't tell you why. Someone's like, what's wrong? And then you respond, can you just PM me?
Yeah. Message me. Yeah, exactly. When you would see other people do this kind of behavior, like, what was your reaction? Like, back in the day?
Well, it was my friend. I'd be like, oh my gosh. Like, what's wrong? Oh no. If it was someone I didn't know, I'd be like, what's going on? I'd be curious. I definitely wasn't rolling my eyes back then.
But what about in high school? Which I feel like I'd stopped vague booking by the time I was in high school.
For sure. I became a little more sentient. I don't know. It's hard for me to know how I felt about the internet back then, because like I would like to think at this point that I felt a certain way about it, but then I'll go back to my Facebook statuses in like 12th grade and be like, what the fuck? Like, I didn't know I was up to that. You know, it was just a completely different culture and language back then. Now when I see someone subtweeting, no, I'm still nosy.
It's interesting. Like, I feel like I have a pretty neutral opinion about vague booking too, but the general consensus from what I was picking up in my research is that people found it incredibly annoying. And I guess we have to think about, like, we were middle schoolers doing this, right? So, like, we didn't have frontal lobes.
Whole chunk of my brain was missing.
Yeah, there was, like, no standard for behavior that we were adhering to. It was Lord of the Flies out there. So yeah. If you think about this in the context of, like, grown adults who have each other on Facebook, who were the ones who were doing this behavior and who all of these think pieces are actually referencing, not, like, 12-year-olds, I can see why it would be incredibly fucking annoying sometimes to maybe come across. Or, like, pathetic.
It is weird to think about early social media not just being dominated by children. I feel like when you're a kid, you have no understanding of anyone who's of an age that is between like your age and your parents' age. Like, you're like, what is that? Like, I didn't have a concept of like 20-something year olds at that age, but they were really on there.
I also sometimes really wonder, like, the adults I did have on Facebook, like family, friends, or relatives. You know, I didn't have a lot of them, but surely they must have found my Facebook presence so weird. Like, what do they think when they see the teens posting the shit that we were posting on Facebook?
I didn't have them on there because I technically wasn't allowed to have Facebook. I was on there illicitly.
But yeah, going back to all of that, like, I'd say vague books are typically seen as, like, cries for help or attention. They're, like, the digital equivalent of sighing really loudly until someone asks you what's wrong, which I do. You're just like... Or if someone like tries to talk to you in the kitchen and you give like really short one word quips.
Why the kitchen?
I don't know. That's like a common area. Or maybe I'm like, that's where people, I don't know. I'm just having a very
like you feel bothered by your mom in your kitchen or something? Is that what that's?
The kitchen just feels like the room in the house that I associate with passive aggression. I don't know.
Certainly.
Maybe I'll unpack that.
It's a passing room. It's a room for passing each other.
For sure. I found an article from the journal Social Media Plus Society that looked at the different ways people look for emotional support on Facebook, and one of the tactics that they offered up was vague booking. In the article, they write that, like, basically Facebook and really most social media is this confusing place where you're likely being connected with both your closest friends and family and then random acquaintances. So this, like, merging of audiences takes place. And that's called context collapse. Basically, like, the context of who you're writing to kind of gets enveloped into one. So let's say you wanted to write a post that was directed to people you were very close to. Maybe you were having a bad day. You wanted to seek some kind of emotional support from your friends who are on Facebook. You're also keeping in mind that, like, your coworker's wife is also on there, and maybe you gotta keep things discreet. So you're looking for the right way and the right, I guess, like, the most socially acceptable balance of offering up your emotional state, but also keeping it discreet enough that it's either not flagging to people as, like, especially worrisome if they're not someone who has to worry about you, or also keeping it, like, kind of specific and coded so that only people in your in circle will actually know what you're referencing to. So like, one of my examples I pulled up, I actually don't remember the context of this is, but I made a Facebook status that was chickens, hee hee. Not a cry for help, but it's like, you'd have to have been there with me in that instance to know what that status was about. It was very much being written for a target audience, but it was, like, being sent out to this greater network. And I
Yeah. My friends and I in high school had, and I won't say what it was, but we had a code word for when one of us lost our virginity. So, like, we would literally post that code word, like, on our Facebook status. And then, like, all of us would be like, ah, like, freaking out in the comments or the replies. It was weird. It was, like, a performative thing.
Yeah.
Or it felt like taboo because it was like this little inside joke about sex. But yeah.
No, exactly. It's kind of, and I think maybe like we're more adept at it because we were on social media in a time where there were definitely these like stronger barriers between those different audiences. Because mm-hmm. you had your friends and you had your parents, and those are two very different groups of people that like shift your behavior, I suppose. So maybe we became even better at like coded messaging. As an outsider, would you say it's pretty easy to spot when someone's fake booking?
Like on Facebook specifically?
Yeah, like when you're on there, like you're like, I know what you're trying to do here with this post.
Absolutely. I think you just learn the language of these mediums really quickly. And again, like social media, like we talked about with the creeping episode, but it really does like encourage nosiness. And so mm-hmm. I think you're always going to be like approaching the stuff you see with a degree of like maybe curiosity and like intrigue. And so I think if you see something relatively vague by some like popular girl at your high school, you're going to be like, bitch, what is it? And then you go ask your friends, you know, you're like, what do you think she's talking about?
Yeah, there's such like a clear language in how people post them and like the characteristics of it, to the point that like in high school, we used to do this thing where we'd go back through each other's Facebook timelines and find statuses we wrote in middle school, and then we'd like them or we'd post them mm-hmm. to bring them back into everyone's timelines. And so my friend Alexa did that to one that I had written. But our friend Claire had then gone and commented, message me underneath in high school, because she like spotted exactly like what the situation was.
Yeah, she knew.
It was a meta joke. So I think that the thing that people maybe hate the most about vague booking is this sort of charade of pretending that you don't want attention, even though we all know that everybody else knows the language of vague booking and what you're doing.
It's like when people are like fishing for compliments. Some like really pretty girl will just be like, my day in the life is a 5. Like the comments can just kind of sniff that fish really totally. Easily. And I feel like similar here, it's like you're fishing for sympathy or you're fishing for just like people asking you what's wrong. And then when you don't tell them, it's extra annoying because you're like, well, then why did you post this?
Yeah, and it's sort of like we know that you know that we know thing. So like, yeah, there's a whole charade going on. I feel like the thing that people really hated about vague booking in particular is, yes, this idea that it's like a cry for attention, whether negative or positive. And I think there's something interesting about specifically early social media, before we figured out how to commodify attention to the extent that we have, that wanting it in any form like felt really stigmatized. You know what I mean? This weird era where I think we were trying to retain a sense of dignity in the face of like early social media, where it was clear that like these were just attention machines, but because we couldn't capitalize off of it yet, we looked down on it.
Yeah, it was more for like social attention rather than like monetary, I guess. Like now it's like more of a combined thing.
Well, I think now that like you can monetize off of attention, we have like more respect for people's ability to garner it. But back yeah. in the day, it was like if you did anything that was too obviously asking for that, it was immediately sort of frowned upon.
Oh my god, do you think Justin Trudeau would have vague booked back then, since we've now decided he's a fame whore?
Yeah, I would love to be on his private Facebook account. I want to find his secret Twitter.
Nice. Yeah.
Okay, as we've established, we are both like lifelong drama queens, and I kind of want to defend the right to be a little annoying about your feelings online, because I think that vague booking is actually just a form of self-expression.
Oh.
And so I want to return to our discussions about the artistic merits of a subtweet, because, you know, earlier we were grading them on like their wit and their impact. And, you know, we talked about how basically the power of a Rihanna subtweet lies in her ability to be both direct and universal.
Mm-hmm.
I think alternatively, an artfully written vague book should be both indirect and specific.
Mm, okay. Enough people need to have an idea of who you're talking about, but the person can't be found guilty, you know, of subtweeting in a way.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the appeal of a subtweet is that it's not being necessarily pointed at someone, but there's enough context there. Whereas I think a vague book, it's not clear who you're talking about, but what you're writing is very specific. It's like a metaphor. It's like you're pulling up some very like evocative thing sometimes, like you're coding your language, but it's just the subject is just like not decipherable. So that to me, it's I'd say like if a good subtweet is like a, you know, a quip from an Oscar Wilde play, then maybe a good vague book should read like poetry or a song lyric. You know what I mean?
That's beautiful.
Yeah, you're coding your meaning, you're using metaphor, you're using all these like literary devices. Sometimes you're literally just quoting a song or a poem. I had a phase of just like, I definitely made my Facebook status firework for sure. Definitely a lot of Taylor Swift quotes up in there, some Christina Perry, all the hits. Yeah, they're evocative, they're expressing an emotion, but they're not spelling anything out.
Is Christina Perry the jar one? What's it called?
Yeah, Jar of Hearts.
Jar of Hearts, yeah.
I thought that was like the deepest song I'd ever heard in 2010.
I quoted this like really obscure Michael Jackson song once on my profile picture. And I like recently looked back at it and I was like, what the fuck was I trying to say?
She's not like other girls.
It was a lyric that had no context or meaning in any way. Like it wasn't really poetic either. It was just kind of a random
lyric. What was
it? It was like, this is it. Here I stand. I'm the light of the world. I feel grand.
But this is it. Is that the... This he was touring it. That when he died.
Here I stand. Yeah, I think it was like 2009. Yeah, it was definitely... You know, I feel like there's a lot of kids that became really obsessed with him after he died, such as myself.
Yeah.
Like my family was already kind of into him, but then when he passed away, it was like me and my little cousin.
Well, I feel like half of what was on TV following that was just like Michael Jackson tributes. So you kind of got a crash course education also in his like cultural importance for kids who were not alive during the peak of his success.
Okay, well, thank you for validating my profile picture caption.
Yes, don't worry. I think all song lyric posts on Facebook are valid. As someone who did it prolifically and way less, there were less deep cuts, I suppose, on my Facebook.
That's okay. It wasn't really a deep cut. It's literally Michael Jackson.
That's true. So, yeah, I don't know. I think, generally speaking, like, maybe a subtweet is like an expression of anger or discontent, and a vague book is a way of expressing maybe some kind of sadness or pain. And if we think about it, these are all considered negative emotions. And so if you think, sorry, sometimes I write stuff and then I'm reading it back a week later and I'm like, sure, so true, queen.
No, I'm just like, damn, we're all really negative on here.
Okay. Sorry?
Continue. No, I liked it. I thought it was funny. No, I was laughing because we're just all so negative. Anyways, go on.
I guess I'm just curious, like, do you think that the fact that these were ways of expressing negative emotions, do you think that maybe lent to the stigma towards them? This is a stupid question.
It's not stupid. I like it. No, it's funny. I don't know why it's funny to me. No, keep going.
No, that's my question.
No, I like it.
I just wanted to talk about
the
catharsis.
It's not a stupid question at all.
I wanted to talk about the catharsis of like posting online for people who are not like, this is a way for people to express themselves that don't have other like outlets that are means of like self-expression. So it's like kind of cute that people feel empowered to like kind of even somewhat articulate how they're feeling, because we do live in like a very waspish and passive-aggressive culture.
I don't think it's a stupid question at all. For some reason, you know, when you have an out-of-body, you just like fly out and you watch yourself knitting and doing a podcast.
Yeah, you're too enveloped in your knitting.
Subtweeting. No, I was listening to you. Just like you go out and you're watching yourself like on a mic with your friend getting paid to be like,
I know, it's so I know.
Good. No, it's a good question though. Okay.
No, it's not.
No, it's just funny. Yeah, I think it's more of like a smells like attention, like it's almost too transparent, and so that's why people kind of roll their eyes at it. Like I think it's a little bit less like, oh, so much negativity. It's like when we get annoyed when someone posts too much on social media, it's like, do you actually care? Like, you're mad that you have to flip through 20 of someone's stories when it's like you could easily just leave the story and go to someone else's. But you feel like a negative emotion. You feel like anger towards it. And I think maybe it's because it makes it all too apparent that we're all on social media. Like, it's a bit of like staring into the mirror or like the void gazing back at thee and being like, oh, no, if I'm on here, too, and this person's being annoying, does this mean I'm annoying? But yeah, I think it's just the transparent like grab for attention that p- pisses people off most.
I think that was also like a scarier prospect to people back in the day when, again, like I think we were really trying to maintain this idea that social media is this separate, fake, other world. And now everyone's like, social media is real life.
Yeah, also people really value honesty, and there's something quite dishonest also about like a subtweet, or like it feels dishonest about a subtweet or a vague book, because it's like, well, just say what you mean. You're being deliberately evasive and like opaque when you could just come out and say it. Like, if you're gonna go through the effort of typing all this out, why don't you just say what you mean? Obviously there are reasons why people don't say what they mean, but that's like maybe what also stirs something in people.
I think for sure. I think it's funny because a lot of the criticisms that I've read towards these things, you know, they were about their indirectness or like the passive aggression side of them. But to me, it's like it suggests that there's this like alternative reality where if we weren't on social media, then we'd all just be saying what we meant all the time and how we felt all the time. And I just don't think that that's true for most people,
not at least
in like the West, at least not like in these more WASPy kind of cultures where passive aggression is sort of like a pretty relied upon tool of communication.
Well, again, it had to go somewhere. I have a whole thing where I hate when I'm like angry at someone or I don't like someone and I have to see them in person because I will ultimately be very nice. Like, I am good at masking, but then it makes me feel like false and like inauthentic to who I am, or it makes me feel like I'm lying, and that feels worse. I'll say what I mean to my friends, but generally, no, I have trouble like being mean to people or like rude to people. It's the Canadian part of me, I guess.
No, I mean, I'm kind of the opposite, whereas I'm like, I can't mask if I don't like someone.
Really?
Yeah, I'm so bad at it. I'm a good, well,
I've never seen you be like,
I'm not rude. I'm more just like, I'm like vacant. You know what I mean?
Hannah does have a bit of a dissociative stare pouch, as Rain Fisher Kwan would call it.
That's me. I also kind of think that social media in this way, like actually has like empowers people perhaps to be more expressive. I think whatever, like the protection of hiding behind a screen or whatever is not great in many ways, but in this sense, if we're thinking about someone's like depressed aunt on Facebook who's going through a divorce, who might not really express herself in any other way, like maybe she doesn't journal, she doesn't like have some kind of artistic outlet. Maybe what she just really needs is to sort of signal to somebody that she's not feeling great and like that this is hard for her. And I think that she should feel free to do that. And I think that like vague booking in its way is like a safer way to accomplish that. And I think same with subtweeting. Like, let's say you're me and you are someone who's like, I'm not very likely to call someone out for something in the minute unless it's like really hit a nerve. So maybe you just like, you need an outlet, and like I have other outlets to express my dissatisfaction, but if you don't, you know, is subtweeting the healthiest?
That outlet is me, first of all.
Yeah, yeah. Just so you know. But it's like, there's a catharsis there that people might get from it. And I'm like, I just don't like this idea that like, we're acting like these platforms are making people more passive aggressive, more indirect, because I actually think it's the opposite. I think our behavior online is like mirroring our social values, and our social values and like our norms have facilitated this more passive aggressive or indirect mode of communication.
Yeah, it's a cultural thing, not necessarily native to social media at all.
But if you think about a subtweet or something, I'm like, have you ever like had a fantasy about singing a karaoke song in front of somebody?
Me with Fiona Apple's Criminal.
Like, you have a specific person in mind you want to sing this to?
Well, it oscillates between who, you know, I'm interested in, but yes. But, like, ultimately no one wants to see me sing Fiona Apple's Criminal for, like, what, the entire 7-minute duration of that song? Anyways.
Oh, I have sung Fiona Apple's Criminal, and I forgot about the crazy musical interlude, and it was boring.
Yeah, it's definitely boring. You have to like strip as well or something, you know. You have to
also, like, none of our friends really knew the song, and so I was like, well, this isn't hitting.
Well, clearly we need new friends.
Yeah.
No, I do think it really comes down to like what the purpose of like a subtweet or a vague book is. And you know, I guess part of it is like wanting attention, but also part of it is like, I don't think you think about this thing for days. Like, I think you post it in the moment in the heat of your feelings, like Miss Demi Lovato, for example. And that's ultimately what the motive is to vent a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, I think Demi Lovato's not a good subtweeter, but she's an honest one.
Yeah. Sorry, not sorry.